The governor suggests that his tax plan doesn't have to mean higher income taxes. Where is this headed? Budget cuts to protect the surplus, an extension for people kicked off the Healthy Indiana plan, and a vote in Congress prompted by an Indianapolis murder. That plus the state's birthday and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending December 13,
2013. AT&T, working to enhance connectivity in Indiana by investing in communication networks. Dedicated to helping Hoosier businesses grow and consumers succeed both at home and at work. AT&T, rethink possible.
This week, the governor's plan to phase out the business personal property tax continues to get a chilly reception. The Indiana Association of Counties estimates that local option income taxes could go up by 2% in some counties under the plan, announced by Mike Pence last week.
The governor spoke at a Boy Scout luncheon. Afterward, he wanted to make it clear that he's earned a merit badge of sorts when it comes to helping out individual taxpayers.
But I think you know that I actually just fought to lower income taxes in Indiana.
The reminder is necessary because the Chamber of Commerce suggests that local income taxes are the best way to pay for the phase-out of the tax on business equipment that the governor called for. Key lawmakers are opposed to the idea of cutting a state tax only to raise local taxes.
We don't want to set that scenario up where we pit each other, the locals against the state officials.
The governor is hearing from mayors who have no desire to raise local taxes.
I've made it very clear to them that we are talking about tax reform, not specifically tax reduction.
Nevertheless, Mike Pence is not yet saying where he thinks the money should come from.
Should Mike Pence provide more direction? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwanes, the host of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. I'm Wish TV State House reporter Jim Shella. Ann Delaney, will lawmakers sort this out for the governor?
Oh, I think they'll sort it out okay. The idea is absurd on its face. We've already reduced the corporate income tax. We've already done away with the inheritance tax. He scaled back the income tax before, and now, of course, we have a shortfall in the budget as a result of that. But what he's trying to do here is to shift $1 billion from what corporations pay onto the middle class in this state. And he says he's not going to raise.
But he's not saying that.
No, he's
going to say I'm going to cut $1 billion from local revenue, and they can figure out how to replace it. Okay? And there's two options for them to replace it. They either raise the property taxes if they're not up on the cap, they're under the cap, or they raise the income taxes. They can't do away with all of those essential services. So he is shifting the burden onto taxpayers.
There's been a suggestion that maybe there could be a new tax on business that would be less onerous than the personal property tax.
Could be. That's one of the options that will certainly be looked upon.
What sort of tax would that be?
Well, you know, they haven't made that clear yet, but this is a situation where the governor's trying to make what's already touted as one of the best tax climates for business in the United States into an even better one. As the economy gets better, the idea is you try to make it the best it can possibly be so that we can grow as quickly as we can to get out of this thing. The problem we have is that this tax affects every business, big and small. Every state around us has phased it out, except for Kentucky, and their rate's much lower than ours. So it's a matter of competition. Now, I was there when he rolled this idea out at the legislative conference on December 5th or whatever it was. And he made it very clear that day that he wasn't about trying to take the money from the local government or schools or anybody else, that he would work with the legislatures to find these revenue sources. Now, that's hard to do because it's $1 billion. It's $1.4 billion last year, and good luck trying to get that done. But look, you know, I applaud the effort. He's trying to put us in a situation where we can grow as fast as we can when the economy gets better.
We have already had every possible cut. You know, we were supposed to.
No, we haven't had every possible
cut. When we had daylight savings time, right to work, corporate income tax, inheritance tax, all those cut, we were supposed to be the mecca for business. And what happens? Our unemployment is higher than the average, and our income is down.
And that's a national recession problem.
Let's go to John.
Yes, it is.
It's
Obamacare. It's Obama recession.
But what the governor is saying is that there are a lot of ways to approach this, that it could be a phase out, and the suggestion has been 10 years, maybe more, that it could be a local option. Counties could decide whether to go in on this or not.
It could be a new personal property, not existing.
Right.
There are a lot of options. You're right. And I think Michigan is in that phase out. You mentioned every state except for Kentucky, but I think their phase out goes all the way to 2024, so they're 2020. So there are slow ways to do this. So much has been written. So much has been exchanged in the way of ideas. The most succinct and I think most accurate assessment, Jim, is one you came up with, either maybe on your blog and on air, which basically two lines. If the governor succeeds in doing away with the business personal property tax, he gets the credit. And if the locals at the county or municipal level boost the tax burden on their residents to make up the difference, they get the blame.
That's exactly what I said.
I know, and that's as I said, it was the most succinct, and I think the most accurate, probably.
Yeah, you're the tax guy.
Thank you.
He's fiscal. He's more than tax.
Right.
He's more than tax.
Does it make sense to phase out the business personal property tax?
Well, you can certainly make an argument for it, and I think the governor is making that argument. But I do think there are a lot of arguments against that. We have had a lot of changes, Ann, in the tax structure. Our tax structure is heavily dependent upon income tax and sales tax, which are completely reliable on the economy. And when the economy doesn't do well, we don't collect as much tax revenue. That's a serious concern. So I think as a fiscal policy, we probably should wait and see. And that doesn't mean that we don't pass something like this. That doesn't mean that we don't find other ways to tax other businesses. But it needs to be a holistic approach. It shouldn't be a box that we check off just to make us look better in the tax rankings.
It also matters what else replaces it, because the shift has been to individual taxpayers.
I do
think that's not going to happen.
Tell me this.
It should happen.
Tell me this, Mike.
The legislature doesn't have it.
2014 is going to be a short session of the legislature.
Right.
The governor has not made it clear whether he wants action on this in 2014. He wants to start the conversation, but does it make sense to take action in a short session?
It makes sense to start the conversation. The sooner the better on the conversation. It's going to be problematic to do it in the short session, only because we heard legislator after legislative leader in the same legislative conference talk about how they're not going to open up the budget in this particular short session year, and they're trying to get in and get out as quickly as they possibly can. So I tell you, that speech he gave that day was probably one of the most comprehensive policy speeches I've ever heard a governor give. Now, after I heard it, I'm saying...
Aside from the state of the state.
Well, that's right, and it's a preview to state. But after I heard it, I'm sitting there thinking, boy, that is an aggressive agenda for a short session year. And that's the problem he's going to have, because he's going to have a difficult time convincing legislators to deal with all that between now and the middle of March.
And you've already had Governor Kennelly shoot some of those down as dead on arrival. So I don't think it's going to happen this next session. But we do have to have a discussion about the shifting tax burden to people with assets and corporations, from people with assets and corporations to average working
people. And that's exactly why he said this is about tax restructuring, not just
but
tax
But he has to offer
John,
a program.
We're talking about the philosophies here and who would pay and who would make up the difference. I think for a lot of lawmakers, the fact, Jim, that it is a short session is the political cover they need. They don't have to wade into the fight about who's going to get penalized and will the little person, the individual, have to suffer. Just say this is not something to be dealt with during a non-budget session.
It'll be back.
Certainly,
Governor Mike Pence this week announced a number of cost-saving measures in lieu of tax revenues that are $141 million below projection in this fiscal year. Among other things, the state will require agencies to hold back an additional 1.5% of their appropriations, sell the state plane, and delay planned expenses for the Indiana Biosciences Research Institute. Those steps will save an additional $57 million this fiscal year. Mike McDaniel, why is it necessary to preserve all of the state surplus, or most of it.
For exactly the reasons it's been that way before. You want to be in a situation where you don't have to crisis and you don't have to raise taxes on the public again. And so you do that to protect what you have. And right now we're in one of the best fiscal situations of any state in the United States because of the prudent work of the legislature and previous administrations and this administration. And so to keep that in place, you got to keep on top of the situation because there's $141 million shortfall, 1.5% on top of the 3% that he called for at the start of the fiscal year. Just makes sense right now to do.
Yeah.
And that keeps our AAA bond rating in place.
Let me tee one up for Ann, because I remember...
Well, like you haven't done that all.
I remember a time not too long ago when Frank O'Bannon, as a Democratic governor, had a $2 billion surplus,
right.
And the Republicans kept saying the state's not a bank.
Give it back. Give it back.
But
the state's not a bank. I remember it.
Why aren't we hearing Democrats say that now?
Well, we like to be consistent.
Okay.
We like to be consistent.
Well, you do hear him say
part
that.
Part of what you got here is the fact that the governor should not have cut the income tax by that fractional percentage point that he did. It didn't make any difference to real people. And on the other hand, this is part of the reason we have a shortfall. I mean, the economy has not recovered like they promised us it would. We're lagging behind the national average on that. Indiana can do better, but not with the same old bromides the Republicans come forward with. They're out of touch.
Isn't the surplus there to make up for bad times?
Well, that's in theory the case. And what we have here is we're only 6 months into the fiscal year. We are $140 million, collecting $140 million less than we thought we would, and that's what the budget was built upon.
But you still have an annual budget of about $15 billion.
Right. And so you're looking at a relatively – well, it's – The surplus is anticipated to be around $1.9 billion. So you're talking about less than 10% in that $141 million of that surplus. So you can make a good argument that we are not really in a crisis situation. We're not even close to it, especially when you have six more months to run in the year. And if the economy improves and tax revenues increase, then you end the year, you may be even with where you thought you'd be. So I think that if the governor is looking at this as a temporary fix or as a hold in case things get bad, then that's one thing. But if he's cutting this money now so that he can ensure that you have $1.9 billion or more at the end of the fiscal year, then he's not being as forthcoming with the public as he could be. They are acting like a bank.
All right. So he sold the state plane, or he plans to sell the state plane, the King Air, that carries him and sometimes his staff around. Evan Bayh sold a King Air. Somebody else bought it back. Mitch Daniels sold several of the state's aircraft.
Well, those are popular targets.
We're losing money on these sales.
Well, there are popular targets for politicians on both sides, and you're right. Evan Bayh, the first time I heard a conversation about the state-owned King Air was when Evan Bayh, as a candidate, had awarded the current administration at that point a Golden Fawcett, a takeoff on the Golden Fleece Award of William Proxmire. And so it's always been a target, you know. Why does everybody get to fly private aircraft? And I don't know what the expenses are. If it's going to, I think it saves potentially
a million and a half,
which again is real money. But I don't know if that clearly that alone
is.
Maybe yours. I think we got our pay stubs mixed up.
It seems to be a popular political gesture.
Well,
yeah,
look,
of course it is.
Look, anywhere you can cut money like that, you ought to do it. And if it's cheaper to lease or to get a charter, they don't use a plane that much anymore. He drives most everywhere. What really would make more sense is a helicopter. And the state police are encouraging that they do that. That makes a lot more sense.
It's not just the raw dollars and savings. It's, I think, the sentiment
the image,
because everybody else has to go and stand in line for security or get on the bus or get on in the car, fill up the tank, versus going out, hopping aboard, and going down the runway. It's just a vision, an image thing, it seems, as much as anything.
Time now for viewer feedback. Each week we post an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question is, should the state budget surplus be protected by spending cuts? Your choices are A, yes, or B, no. Last week's question was, should Glenda Ritz be removed as chair of the State Board of Education? 4% said yes. 96% said no. Thank you, Indiana State Teachers Association. 3,200 responses. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to the WFYI.org/IWIR and look for the poll. More than 10,000 low-income Indiana residents who get health insurance from the Healthy Indiana Plan will be able to keep their benefits through April. They are people like Brian First. Last week, we told you how he received a cancellation letter after being on the program for 2 years. It's the result of new income guidelines. The delay is meant to give people more time to obtain coverage through the Federal Health Care Exchange. The HIP extension could cost Indiana up to $11 million. John Ketzenberger, the governor, also won a meeting this week with HHS Secretary Kathleen Sebelius to talk about expanding HIP further. Which one of those is the most significant development?
Well, I think, honestly, I think it's the people who are going to be able to have at least 4 more months of coverage, because these people were pretty much left in the lurch by the changes that were made by the administration regarding Medicaid and by their decision not to expand Medicaid. And so it at least buys them some more time to hopefully find some coverage either on the exchange or some other way. So that brings us to the second point, and that is the meeting with Kathleen Sebelius. Hopefully it will be a productive meeting and not an optical meeting, and that they can come to some kind of accommodation so that more people will be able to be insured one way or another, either through Medicaid expansion or the expansion of Healthy Indiana Plan and or the federal exchange, so that we can get out of this situation where we're draining our resources by having people who are uninsured having to go get medical care that's completely compensated and is not very productive at all.
Does it appear, John, that the governor's position in opposition to Obamacare is softening, both by extending this deadline and pursuing an extension?
Actually, maybe a little. I hadn't really thought of it that way as much as I see the administration position softening. Because I'd say 6 months ago, I would have said the chances that the federal government would have embraced elements of the Healthy Indiana Plan were slim to none. But now we're seeing signals, and we saw a very clear signal, the state of Iowa, Republican Governor Terry Branstad was able to secure, I don't want to say concessions, but a willingness on the part of the federal government to say, yeah, we'll let you take some of your dollars that would be routed through to the state through the Affordable Care Act and then allow people to use that to get private insurance, private pay insurance. Now, that's a sign of optimism if you're Mike Pence saying, well, if they did it there, yeah, and you require the 2% of their base pay, just as the Healthy Indiana Plan does. And then how much of that, I wonder, is because of the frustrations that the public has had. Let's put it this way. The administration in Washington has been humbled, and I think that has made them a little more flexible than they were.
I think that's changed the landscape. I also think the fact that they are getting the website working now, and a lot of people are signing up, and there are indications that not only that Obamacare is here to stay, but also that it may actually be effective in a lot of circumstances, is opposition to going along with Obamacare melting.
No, I don't think so, at least with the American public it doesn't seem to be. Look, we had a situation here where the people affected by this particular move were those between 100% of poverty and 200%
right.
of poverty. The agreement is between the federal government and the state of Indiana to deal with those people that are above the 100% level. And the reason that
it's the 10,000 of the 35,000
right.
people currently
on. And the reason that this was necessary was because those people were given notice in October that they needed to start finding this, and they were told they could go on the federal website, which obviously didn't work very well. And so that's why this extension.
Right.
And so they have time now to go do that. And I applaud the governor for coming up with the extra $11 million to pay for it and to give this extension. The governor wants people to be insured, as does the federal government, and they're going to work together to get this done. And I think there is a change in attitude in D.C., about this, and I think the fact that there is going to be this meeting probably in February between the secretary and the governor is a good sign. They say they want to work together. I believe that is probably the case. And either way, eventually Indiana's going to come up with a way that all of these people are going to be taken care of. But it'll either be this way, and I think the Iowa situation gives us great hope that it is going to be this way.
I'm kind of interested. This meeting is going to take place when Mike Pence plans to be in Washington for a governor's association meeting, but why not sooner?
Yeah, that's a good question. And you got to ask whether or not this is a meeting where you don't want to be the secretary doesn't want to say, I refuse to meet, doesn't want to be accused of refusing to meet with him, and whether there are any meaningful negotiations.
So you don't think that
I don't put a lot of stock in this as to whether or not it's going to do anything long term. The Healthy Indiana program has never been successful. We have had a fraction of the people sign up that they anticipated would sign up for it, and the idea that somebody at that level of poverty can make co-pays with it is ridiculous. And that's the essence of Obamacare.
Well, actually, in the case of Brian First, who we profiled last week, his cost on Obamacare has gone up from what it was.
And I bet his policy is a lot better as well. And that's another thing to consider. It covers a lot more than Healthy Indiana does. So you're comparing apples and oranges with that. I think this is a good move on the governor's part because these people had been envisioned to be part of the Medicaid expansion, which he, of course, rejected. But at least they're not left in the cold in the meanwhile. So that's a positive development. But we'll see whether or not he gives enough. Yep. I think he's going to have to because states all around us, when we're talking about being an island, we're an island of the uninsured among all of those other islands of insurance.
Just a quick fact check. I'm not sure, is it accurate to say that people have not signed up for the plan? In fact, there are too much demand on the available reason. It's the opposite.
And there's a 95% approval of the people.
But the people, the problem isn't that you can't get people to sign up. It's that because it's cigarette funds that come to pay for it. There's not.
You can't expand
but it's
it.
The opposite.
They are
but it's the opposite.
All right,
of what,
so it's not signing up, but it's not covering.
The suggestion there's no demand is I think.
No, I didn't mean
there's a waiting. There is a waiting list for the Healthy Indiana
That's
plan.
Right.
All right. A vote in Congress this week was meant to give some peace of mind to a family of an Indianapolis murder victim. Alicia Kale was an apartment manager who was shot and killed in 2012 by a veteran named Michael Anderson. Anderson also killed himself and was later buried in a national cemetery in Michigan. It was against the law, but cemetery officials were unaware of his crimes and had no authority to remove his body after the burial. Until now, that is. Republican Susan Brooks sponsored the bill.
I'm outraged not only that the Kale family has had to endure yet another injustice after Alicia's life was needlessly cut short, but also that our brave servicemen and women who in some cases who have given the ultimate sacrifice to their nation are buried next to a murderous criminal.
The vote in favor of that bill was 398-1. John Schwanes, does the no vote surprise you?
Well, the person who cast the no vote is a rep from Michigan, Justin Amish, who has had some other positions that haven't necessarily been in sync with anybody, I guess, his own party.
Second term.
But I guess I don't know if the individual in question was a constituent. I don't know the dynamic. But yes, to answer your question, that would surprise me.
Actually, obviously you've done a little research. I did too. He keeps a Facebook page where he explains all of his votes. He didn't explain this one.
Well, that's good because I looked for an explanation.
You'll
I didn't
notice
find
that
them.
There were what about 35 or 36 representatives who didn't vote E2, which is not always unusual, but. It does make you wonder on a bill which seemingly has such overwhelming support, why you wouldn't bother to vote, or why you would vote against it.
It's more surprising that he would vote against it than just to take a pass and not vote.
Right. Meanwhile, Senator Coates authored this bill. Joe Donnelly was a co-sponsor.
Right. It was a bipartisan effort, and it's the right thing. I mean, I understand the Veterans Authority not having the ability to remove it, but it should never have happened in the first place. And I hope it gives some peace to the family of the victim.
Okay. It's the definition of constituent service.
Absolutely. Susan Brooks did a great job with this, and so did Senator Coates in particular. But this had to be done. And to concentrate on the one goofball that voted against this is just, ridiculous.
And you were meant to give Senator Donnelly credit on that one, too.
Senator Donnelly, too.
Thank you.
Thank you for some perspective.
You're welcome, Mike.
Finally, the state of Indiana turned 197 this week. There was a Statehood Day ceremony at the State House. Student winners of the Hoosier Bicentennial Heroes Essay Contest were honored, and they got to read their winning essays. More than 500 fourth graders attended the ceremony to learn more about the changes our state has been through in the last 197 years.
How we used to be, like, what clothes we used to wear, technology was, and the new modern ways and stuff in the culture.
Arianna Meyer of IPS School Number 84 there. Ann Delaney, what did you do to recognize Statehood Day?
I'm with Mike. Let's focus on the real story here. The real story is those kids coming and learning about the state and enjoying the celebration. I think that was a very good event.
It's part of the buildup to what's going to be a bicentennial celebration in 2016. How big is that going to be?
It's going to be huge. It should be huge. It's something to celebrate. We've got a lot of great things going on in the state, a great history here. And we should celebrate it to the max. And I think there's a commission in place that's doing just that. And you're going to see a rollout of a lot of major events coming around in the bicentennial year.
Does the public care?
Sure. I mean, about a bicentennial? Well, it's incumbent on the state to help
make us care.
But I think people
Quick exercise for anybody who wants to look about a little history. Go on YouTube. Back home again in Indiana, see how many versions have been done, and it'll change your opinion of Indiana for the better.
There's only
That's
one version
Indiana
of my
Week
opinion,
in Review.
Right?
Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwanis of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Kenzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/podcast. Or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity or Bright House Networks. I'm Jim Shella of Wish TV. We'll see you again next week.
AT&T, working to enhance connectivity in Indiana by investing in communication networks. Dedicated to helping Hoosier businesses grow and consumers succeed both at home and at work. AT&T, rethink possible.